Hey, welcome to Sentinel Watch, where every week we tackle big questions from a spiritual perspective. I'm Carlos Machado. Here with me is a good friend, a Christian Scientist here in Friendswood, Texas. We actually attend church together, Robert Schultz. Robert, welcome to Sentinel Watch.
Well, thank you, Carlos, for having me.
It's a pleasure to have you across the table. Robert, we're going to be talking about dealing with conflict, which is something we see around the world so much. And we're going to be looking at that issue from a spiritual perspective, like I said in the introduction. Just to get us started, I'm wondering, what's your background with spirituality? I know you're a Christian Scientist. Is that something you grew up with?
Well, it is, actually. I was born and raised as a Christian Scientist. My father came into Christian Science from his parents, and when he married my mother, then she became a Christian Scientist. What really cemented the two of them to be Christian Scientists was when, after World War II, they could not have any children. So they went to a Christian Science practitioner, my father knowing that they existed, although he had kind of moved away from Christian Science a little bit through the war. But he went to a Christian Science practitioner, and she helped him by praying for him and my mother. And as a result, they had four children.
Wow.
That began this trek down Christian Science road with our family.
I'll say here that we're very grateful for the work of that practitioner.
Absolutely.
For those who are not familiar with Christian Science, a Christian Science practitioner is somebody who is available to anybody, for people to call when they have issues, and they will pray for them and help them through a spiritually based prayer approach to solving problems.
Right.
Robert, one of the reasons I've been wanting to have you on Sentinel Watch is because I know you've dealt with several issues of conflict in your life, and you've dealt with them from the perspective of Christian Science, you know, using your practice of Christian Science. We look out on the world today and it seems like there's just an atmosphere of adversity. I wonder if you could share one of your personal stories of how you've dealt with conflict in your life.
I'd be glad to do that. When I married my second wife, and that's been 18 years ago now, end of December.
Congratulations.
Thank you. So 18 years ago, I married my wife. And because of that, her children, her three daughters, were very upset. So upset that they didn't want to be in the same room with me. It wasn't because I came in and destroyed a loving family relationship. That relationship dissolved without my help. But the children loved their dad. And so I had such understanding of that feeling for them, my empathy, my compassion for them. They have this idyllic thought about it, and here comes this stranger.
How did that feel like to you beyond what you felt for them?
I actually never resented that. I didn't feel offended. I knew where it was coming from, but I knew that love, God, would heal it all. There was a need there that had to be met. And the need was for them to feel love, not hate, not resentment, but completeness. After all, God is our Father and our Mother, all of us. When Jesus prayed and he gave us that wonderful Lord's Prayer, the first words he says are, "Our Father." He didn't say, "Some of you have a Father in heaven, the rest of you are out of luck."
Yeah. Tell me a little bit more about the basis for that.
I see that there's a gold standard, so to speak, in Christianity, and also something that I like to refer to as the dirt standard in in belief.
What is that?
So imagine a financial institution that has lots of gold to back up its claim that it can help everybody who wants to invest in that financial institution. Bring your money, put it in here. We've got it backed by gold. In Genesis, in the Bible, the very first book of the Bible, by the way, in the very first chapter of the very first book of the Bible, is the statement by God that everything that he made is very good, and that he made man, male and female, in his image. That is the gold standard. The gold standard is all the way through. That thread of gold goes all the way through the scriptures, all the way through the prophets, all the way to Jesus, who in his Sermon on the Mount says, "Be ye therefore perfect, even as your Father which is in heaven is perfect." He made no allowance for imperfection in God's creation. God made us. We did not make ourselves. God made us perfect. If we see ourselves as created by God, how can we see anything but perfection? Okay, now imagine a financial institution that says, bring your money in here, invest your time and your effort and all, and we're going to back it up with dirt. In the second chapter of the Bible, we read about a creation being described as coming from dust, which is dirt. So with the standard of dirt, what do we expect to get? We get more dirt.
Let me see if I can pick up the thread here and understand how you're thinking about this. So we have presented there in these two chapters two different ways of looking at creation, essentially. One that's made in God's image, all of us made in God's image, or all of us as having the dirt standard and being flawed individuals. It sounds like you were applying the gold standard to how you were seeing your new family, even though the appearance was closer to the dirt standard.
That is so true.
Did you actually see results from this stand that you were taking mentally?
We did. It took a little while. I would say maybe a few months. Her kids, for instance, they wanted to celebrate Christmas with her, but she had to go do it in a coffee shop. They couldn't come into our home because they didn't want to. And neither she nor I forced them to do what they weren't ready to do. And as I prayed about that, unfortunately, my wife's mother, stepmother actually, passed on. And that was the time that she decided, okay, when we go to the funeral, we're all going to travel together in the same car. Now, we lived in LA at the time, and the funeral was in San Diego. So those of you who know the geography, that's about hour and a half travel time, maybe 2 hours, depending on good old California traffic.
Depending on traffic, yes.
So here we are in a van with the three daughters, a son-in-law, and my wife and myself. All the way down to San Diego, I didn't say anything. I let God have the first word, the last word, and all the words in between. And I stayed out of it.
What does that mean for you, letting God have the word?
I knew that God was communicating, always talking to each one of us. But like a radio, an old-time radio anyway, where you could dial in a station. And those of you that remember that, you turn the dial too far, it gets staticky. You turn it back and, oh, it's coming in clearer, clearer, clearer. Oh, there it is. That's the way it is with us. As we dial in, we hear God clearer and clearer and clearer. If we turn the dial away towards the material thought about things and resentments and so forth, that clouds it up, it makes it fuzzy, and the hearing is impaired. But it doesn't mean that God is not speaking. He's continually speaking. So turning back to that, as we traveled down in the vehicle, and I said nothing, I was saying a lot, because I was letting God do the talk. And I knew that he was talking to each of them and encouraging them and showing them that there's nothing here to fear. There's nothing here to be resentful of, to be happy for the mother, to be happy for all of us. And that was the breaking of the ice. And after that trip, we started getting together. My wife had season tickets to the Dodgers baseball team. And we would go to games and have fun. And it just, the ice just, it melted away. And it was all done without me saying anything.
Connect the dots for us. What do you think happened there?
They didn't find anything in me that would encourage them to continue to be angry or resentful. Mrs. Eddy talks about a situation. She describes it as if you're playing badminton. And I don't know if badminton is played anymore, but
maybe pickleball is
okay.
A more modern reference here.
There we go. Okay, so we're playing pickleball. And she says that if you knock the ball back and forth, if, say, somebody is angry and they knock the ball into your court and you return that ball with anger, resentment, saying, why are you angry at me? I didn't do anything. And then they knock the ball back at you and say, yeah, but you did this and this and this. And then you knock the ball back to them. I mean, that conversation can go on for quite a while. But Mrs. Eddy says in her illustration, where she talked about badminton, but we're talking about pickleball. if somebody stops knocking the ball, then the conversation can change. Don't bat it back at them and be resentful. Don't take offense. We have to know that all power lies with God, and that God is the only life, the only love, the only truth that we can know.
I love this story for so many reasons. Part of it is just the way that I think I relate to it, because so many times I've had bad interactions with family members, and not even to the degree that you just shared, but I'll find myself thinking about those interactions years down the road and praying about them and trying to apply some of these ideas that you're talking about here. But in your story, I see a stand that does not allow for the feeling of hurt to come in. I wonder if you can give us just a little bit of context. What allows you to come into a situation like that without letting the hurt in to begin with?
Jesus gave us a new commandment. He said, you've heard eye for an eye, which dates back to the Mosaic way of approaching life. He said, but I'm going to give you a new commandment. Love your enemies and pray for them that despitefully use you and persecute you in order that you can be the children of God. Now, going into situations like this, how is it possible to love when it just seems like nothing but a wall of hate or resentment? Because looking past that, you know that actually those people, those situations, they need God even more. Loving them is seeing them the way God made them. And in fact, referring to the Mosaic Decalogue, the Ten Commandments in particular, the ninth commandment says, do not bear false witness against your neighbor. If we are seeing our neighbor as hateful, ugly, resentful, mean, we're bearing false witness against the neighbor that God made, that we know and want to know is the truth about all of us. So they're in great need of this Christian thought, which Mrs. Eddy has brought to clarity in Christian Science, that actually the enemy is not a person. It's not a place. It's not a thing. It is simply an evil belief. And in letting go of it, they are learning the right thing about themselves, the true identity that they have. And that is reforming them. And reform is what we all need. So we can't hate a person because they're doing wrong. We need to love them out of the wrong that they're doing. Show them the better way. Show them the way that Jesus walked. All the way through the cross and beyond, he did nothing but love. He went into all these situations. He didn't avoid them. He went in and shared the truth with them, encouraging everybody to rise up higher, to follow him, to follow his commandments. And that one new commandment is so strong, to love your neighbor and to love your enemy. He says sinners can love those that love them, but you need to do more. So I think if you're going to be God's idea, which you are, and if you're going to live that way, which you should, you have to live it with the gold standard of love.
I should mention for listeners that we'll have these citations that you're referring to. We'll have a list of them also in the description of the podcast. I think what I'm hearing from you is this dedication to living your life in a Christian way, to living your life according to the teachings of Christian Science that you've grown up with. I'm getting this visual that it almost creates a shield around you when you walk into these situations.
That is a perfect description. Mrs. Eddy talks about how good thoughts are an impervious armor, and clad therewith we are shielded from the attacks of every sort. And it envelops all of us, and we are shielded, all of us.
I'm going to shift gears here just a little bit, because I think sometimes for those who are not familiar with the practice of Christian Science, these topics may hint at living a life of getting run over by others. But one thing that I've just so enjoyed about meeting other Christian Scientists and hearing their stories like yours is that confidence that we get in Christian Science that love is powerful, and that, for lack of better words, that God has our back even in bad situations, comes from a life of experience with it and seeing that work to protect us again and again. I remember a few years ago, I think you wrote an article that had to do with a physical altercation that you had. You were a teenager, I think?
That's correct. Yeah.
I wonder if you could share that story, because as I'm listening right now, I can start to see how that starts to build just a life of confidence in God's protection when in the face of adversity.
Well, that's true. And before we talk about that incident, I do want to say that the relationship with the three girls has grown so beautiful that they wanted us to live with them.
Oh, wow.
We moved to Cincinnati, Ohio, from California, because my wife wanted to be closer to the grandchildren that were coming along from one of the daughters. Mm-hmm. And when we got there, they wanted to find a house where we could all live together. That's quite a contrast from when they didn't want to be in the same room with me.
Yeah, complete reversal.
Completely reversed.
Yeah.
And then as life moved on and the husband of the daughter got a job in Houston, we then moved to Houston following them and the grandchildren. And now, a few years later, we have actually added on a whole wing to our house and built up a guest house on the property so that two of the daughters and five grandchildren now live with us in this compound. So, and we're all happy, and we all are so free of all of that. All of that resentment is never there. And in fact, if they listen to this podcast, it'll be the first time that they'll have ever heard me talk about this situation. Mm. We've never had a conversation about it. It just healed, and we just moved on, and it grew, and more love was expressed. And they are very respectful, very loving children. And so here we are, we're all living together. And I think there's somewhere Mase says something about the best sermon ever preached is truth practiced and demonstrated.
Yeah.
As Christians, people look at us and they go, I want to be like that, or I don't want to be like that. If they see us doing what we're preaching by our lives and it's having an effect on us, and they can see the good that it's doing and the good it's doing for others, that encourages them. It's a sermon of life lived.
Yeah, it's almost like no preaching or sermon is needed, because the sermon is the life. It's
exactly.
Just it's a living proof.
It is a living proof. And if God has a gold standard, not a dirt standard, then man is golden.
Yeah.
And that currency of love that we spend when we're giving to others, it's backed by the gold standard of God. And it is love that heals, not hate, and not retaliation, and not resentment, and not retribution. It is a reforming of the thought, the attitude, the actions of each of us that brings about the realization of God's love for us. It lifts us higher to the spiritual thought about ourselves, and not the material or the dirt thought about ourselves. Mm. Man is not material. Mrs. Eddy points out he is spiritual.
I think from listening to you, I can see that the rewards of that make following that standard easier.
It is so true. In fact, we were going to talk about an earlier incident in my life when I was about 19 or 20, going to college in Kansas City, downtown. I worked at a high-end electronics retail store. There were only two people that worked in that store, the manager and myself. So as I'm working there one day around lunchtime, the manager goes off to grab a bite to eat. And shortly after that, a bunch of guys come in. One of them is busy talking to me and trying to get me to show him some equipment in the sound room, which is an enclosed area with glass walls. Mm-hmm. As I walked towards that room, I could see in the glass wall, acted like a mirror, I could see that one of the guys ducked down behind the counter of the store. Mm. And so I spun around and I went back over there, and he was on his hands and knees trying to get into the cash register, the cash drawer. And I remember saying to him, what are we doing, playing hide and seek? And he looked at me sheepishly, and he got out from behind the counter. And then I got in behind the counter, and then they all started yelling at me, all kinds of ugly stuff. And I don't remember what they said. It didn't stick to me.
You don't remember having any fear?
I was not afraid. I was not afraid at all. I was just calm. That was God's love being poured on me. And I didn't realize it at the time because it's instantaneous.
Yeah.
It's not that I had, give me 5 minutes and let me pray, okay?
Yeah, the situation's happening. You're not getting a moment to think about it.
Not at all. What is coming back is what is habitual. And that is going to God in my thought so much that it's present with me.
Part of your daily practice.
Exactly.
I've had experiences where I've been in a dream and something happens in the dream. And I wake up and I realize I was trying to think about it from God's perspective and how to approach the situation in a spiritual
That way. Is so true.
And it really does become this life practice of approaching things from the teachings of Jesus, right, from the revelation of Christian Science.
And that practice, as you said, brings about good results. So here I am in this store, and these guys are yelling at me, and I'm not letting all that stuff stick to me. Mm-hmm. Why would I take offense at something I know is not right? It's not true about me, what they were yelling. So they eventually stopped and walked away and went out of the store. A couple of days later or so, the manager goes off to lunch again. And I was very busy at this time. I had noticed that these guys had come back into the store, but I had no time to deal with them. But when everybody left the store and the manager came back, he said, "We've been robbed. Our sound room back there, all of the expensive equipment is gone." Mm. Well, I suspected it was the men that had been in there before. Mm-hmm. And they came while I was very busy and distracted, and they stole what they could and they left. Mm. So the police were called, a report was made, and so forth. Now, a couple of days later, I am going to go off on an errand, and I go out the front door of the store. And as I go out, there's a car parked on the curb right next to our store. And adjacent to our store is a boutique, a little clothing store. And as I was walking past the car, these men got out of the car and they had paper grocery sacks. And they walked right in front of me, right into the store next to us with these open bags. So I had a choice to make. They're going in that store to rob, just like they did us. I chose to go in. And I went in, followed them in, and they immediately went down into the basement of the store where there was a lot of clothing and so forth. And the sales lady, she came out and I said, "I think you should call the police. You're being robbed." Mm. And she scurried back to the back room or whatever and made the call, left me at the top of the stairs. Up come these guys out of the top of out of the basement up the stairs. They all had their bags and they threw them at me and they're all empty. And they stormed out of the store. The lady came back and I said, "No harm, no foul. They didn't steal anything. Everything's fine." And I left. Now, I was acting on principle, not on anger or hate or revenge. And my mind was on doing the right thing, being governed by God and letting His wholeness, His completeness just cover the scene. Mm. I went out the door. They were still in their car. Now, I had a choice to make again. Do I just go on my errand or do I go back into the safety of the store? I chose to continue on my errand because I felt that I had done what I needed to do and I was not afraid. So I went on down. Well, they all got out of their car. Evidently, they were waiting for me. And they came up and they surrounded me. And they started that yelling again, which today I cannot remember what they said.
Yeah.
But as they yelled at me, they were backing me up, backing me up, backing me up until I couldn't go any further because I was up against a chain link fence. And the leader of this, I guess you could call it a gang, of these men, there were five of them, much taller than me and much bigger. He was pointing his finger at my face, right at my nose. And then all of them started hitting me with their fists in my face. And you know what happened next? We talked about that impervious armor before, that good thoughts and impervious armor, shielded from the attacks of error of every sort. So as this attack was happening on my face, I could see it. I looked right at the leader. I looked right in his eyes. I never diverted, and his fists were coming, and everybody else's fists were coming. And I dropped my arms to my side. I didn't defend myself. I didn't try to protect myself, shield myself from any blows. My arms went straight down on my sides. I just stood there, totally opposite of what I would do normally. Mm-hmm. And the fist just kept pounding. And then the leader kind of cocked his head a bit and he stopped hitting me. And the other men stopped hitting me. And they all walked away and got in their car and drove off. And I was just left there standing. I wasn't even knocked down to the ground. That was how powerful God's love was in that situation for me in that minute. It was instantaneous protection.
Were you hurt?
I got, as it turned out, a black eye, but that black eye didn't even hurt. And it faded away shortly, probably a couple of days. But I remember at the time thinking, I guess they were hitting me because I didn't just imagine it here. You know, I've got a black eye here.
Yeah.
That was it. That was all there was to it. I never felt hurt. And I actually finished my errand after that and went back. And I guess that's when the black eye maybe was showing. And the manager goes, what happened? And I told him, and the police were called and all of that. That was the last I ever saw of those men. But I know all these years later, I know that they were impressed by the good that they saw in front of them. It wasn't me as good. It was God's goodness that protected this individual whom they, for some reason, in their mind, thought they had to hate. And yet that individual didn't hate them and wasn't afraid of them. Mm. So it had to have a transforming, a reforming effect on them. I know it has. There's no way a person could do that and not come away from it with a better view of life and man. How could you not?
That's just such a wonderful experience, Robert. I love it so much more now than I ever did before. And one of the things I'm taking from it is just that this is a possibility of a Christian life. And like we talked about earlier, you know, we do look around the world and there seems to be so much animosity, but walking into these situations with that Christian armor can have a real effect.
It most certainly can. We all can live and do right and live in God. That's who made us. That's where we live. That's where we have our being. So hatred needs to be put down. Hatred is simply a lie being believed and then acted upon. But if we can understand God and that gold standard we talked about, then why would we ever want to invest in something that's going to leave us worse off? Get something back for what you put in. Put into good and you're going to get back good, pressed down and running over.
Invest in that gold standard.
Exactly. Get back a good percentage.
Robert, thank you so much for joining us and thank you so much for sharing these ideas. Robert Schultz is a Christian Scientist in Friendswood, Texas. It's been a real pleasure sitting with you here.
Thank you, Carlos. My pleasure too.
Sentinel Watch is a production of the Christian Science Sentinel. I'm Carlos Machado. The podcast is produced by me, Sophie Ungerleiter, and our executive producer, Amy Richmond. Our production assistant is Natasha Telshow. Our editor is Lisa Rennie-Seitzma. Our audio engineers are Tim Malone, Noel Flatt, Alyssa Britton, and Ian Case. Our theme music is by Jonah Bobo. We'll see you next time.
This podcast is produced and copyrighted by the Christian Science Publishing Society.